Seth. This is Madeline from Madeline Blair from LRI.
Hey, Madeline.
Madeline.
Hello. I've been just fascinated with your perspectives on the team and on the organization. As you know, my focus tends to be on the individual. What role does staying current play in creating change or high-performance teams?
What role does...
Staying current.
Staying current.
Right, keeping yourself up to date when you're in your field.
In a fast-moving world, it's almost the whole ball game. And in fact, the driving force behind the high-performance teams is, in fact, how do you cope with a radically changing world? How do you cope with a world in which new things are emerging from the work, new things are emerging from other organizations, new things are emerging in the marketplace, new things are happening with your clients. Your clients are continually wanting something new, something different. And finding a more agile way to manage is really one of the driving forces behind this, because particularly in software, the failure rate of ways of working in which you decide what to do in advance and then try to design it and analyze it and implement it were really quite staggering. Failure rates of something like 80% on big software projects. So something had to be done, and dealing with change was one of the crucial issues. So working in an iterative fashion and being open to outside ideas, being open to new developments is a crucial part of actually getting the high performance that we're talking about. But Seth, you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I agree with everything you said there. And I think that, you know, anytime people are coming together and engaged in conversation, they're creating their shared understanding. And whatever people can bring to that conversation that informs other people is tremendously valued. That, to me, that really is the kind of the core of the value that people bring. So staying current is hugely important.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Good to have you on the line.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Dan in San Francisco. I'm just kind of wondering, I missed some of the stuff at the front end of the presentation. Is this going to be rebroadcast at all, or is this a one-time thing?
Yeah, it will be on the website. Give me a day or two, and I'll put it up on my website, and Seth will put it too.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if you send us an email, Dan, we can make sure you get the link.
Okay, and I should just respond to the same email that I got this thing from, or do you have...
Yeah, that'll work fine. What did you get? You got a note from either Steve or myself?
I'm sure I got something.
Yeah, if you hit reply, or you can write steve@stevedenning.com or seth@visionaryleadership.com, either one, and just say, please send a link to the audio when it becomes available, and we'll get it to you.
Great. Thank you very much.
You bet. Okay. Anyone else?
Hey, guys. This is Julie Wickert, and I really appreciate you doing this. This has just been really exciting and interesting. And I'm especially curious about the storytelling aspect of this maybe process of forming a team or creating an environment where this kind of team can thrive. And is that a big piece of it?
Yes. It's not the whole ball game, but it is a big part of it, and it comes in a number of ways. One is that, this is about a big, big change, fundamental, basic change, and there's no way that it's possible to persuade people to undertake this change without skilled storytelling. And one of the fascinating things to me is that the leaders of this movement, the founders of it, people like Ken Schwaber and Jeff Sutherland, are magnificent storytellers. They probably don't know it, but they are. They are brilliant tellers of little examples, little anecdotes, very funny and very persuasive. So the storytelling is a huge part of, first of all, persuading people to undertake and to understand this rather weird idea, this strange idea that's coming along. Why would we possibly be willing and interested in turning our organization upside down? It's storytelling that has the capacity to reach out to people and to do that. Secondly, within the team itself, How do teams self-organize, particularly teams of people who are comprised of people who are cognitively diverse, people who are different from each other? How do you get those people to self-organize and to mesh together and to trust each other deeply and to get into a higher level of productivity? One of the key ways is that the team members get to know each other's story. They get to know who the other people on the team are, start to see the world through their eyes. And so one of the key coaching techniques in fostering and accelerating the self-organizing process is to get the members of the team to actually share stories with each other so that the people on the team get to understand each other. The third dimension is that in focusing the team on clients, focusing the team on delighting clients, the team really has to understand the story of the client or the stakeholder. They have to understand what is going on in the world of the client or the stakeholder. What are their hopes and dreams? What are they hoping to do with this product or service? How would they be using it? What sort of things would be going on in their life? Having that kind of deep understanding of the client is a key for the team to actually get into this high performance mode. What's interesting about these teams is that they talk about implementing stories. I implemented three stories in the last month. And I thought, when I first heard that, I thought, wow, I mean, I've never heard that before. Someone implementing a story. And it's just matter of fact. People talking about, I implemented so many stories and it's simply become part of their world that this is about implementing stories. This is about imagining a story of the client, of how they'd be using this piece of software, and then making that story come true, making it become a reality and an actuality, and then actually meeting with the representatives of examples of the clients and stakeholders and seeing whether they are delighted. And if they're not delighted, well, they'd like this aspect, but they're not so keen on that. They'd like another little thing here. Going back and producing that and then seeing real genuine delight and being responsive to people. So it's not about producing things, it's about delighting people. And so that interactive nature relationship between the team and the client is something that somehow got lost in Frederick Taylor's systems, and this is a way of bringing it back so that the team is directly connecting with the very people who are going to be using the outputs of what it is. And that, of course, creates tremendous satisfaction that you're not a cog in some inanimate mechanistic system. You're actually dealing with other human beings and creating delight and satisfaction. So storytelling is not the only part of this, but it's certainly a big part of what it takes to make it happen.
Yeah, and I echo that. And the direct connection that Steve's talking about, for me, what you're really talking about here is bridging worlds. And story exchange, story listening, storytelling is the best way that I know to do that. And the reason is because when you tell a story, people get a strong sense of the context. They get a sense of the holistic aspect of both the person who's telling and the person who's listening. It's one of the most effective tools I know for really bridging the different worlds that people live in. But that could be the project team and the customer. It could be senior leadership and their subordinates. It could be any group of partners. Storytelling is just extremely effective.